From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. With just a few weeks to go before the seminal midterm elections that could change the political landscape of the U.S., a new report has been released assessing the Democratic Party. The report is authored by the same progressive analysts who wrote the Democratic Autopsy of the 2016 election published last year. This new report comes a year later, offering a critical evaluation of how the Democratic Party may or may not have learned from its disastrous mistakes that led to the loss of the White House in 2016, and also the loss of congressional control in earlier elections. My guest is Pia Gallegos, a longtime civil rights attorney, current Democratic Party Ward Chair and State Central Committee member in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She's co-authored both reports, and the latest report has just had its excerpts published in The Nation magazine. The official full report will be out Wednesday. Welcome to the program, Pia.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So let's first talk about what the report last year said. We did cover the report on our show, but to give a recap of the autopsy, Democratic autopsy of the 2016 election, how would you summarize where the Democratic Party went wrong?
Well, the Democratic autopsy, available on democraticautopsy.org, did an analysis of the policies and outreach of the Democratic Party and how that contributed to the failure to win the presidential election. And the conclusions were that the policies were not bold and robust and simple so that people wanted to vote. And also that the outreach in poor minority youth communities was very poor also, and that the Democratic Party had not spent the money on the outreach necessary to mobilize voters.
So here we have a year later, and a lot has happened. A year after the Democratic autopsy was published, 2 years nearly after the disastrous 2016 election. So the Democratic Party has had 2 years to figure out what went wrong and to try to regain the trust of voters. The question is, did the Democratic Party even consider that it was its fault, that there was something that it didn't do well enough of that led to Hillary Clinton losing against the most unpopular rival that a Democrat could have ever faced? Tom Perez, the party chair, admitted that African-American voters were being taken for granted. So we've had a few admissions like that. But as a whole, do leaders like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer even acknowledge that the Democratic Party in some ways deeply failed the nation?
I think yes. And a few changes have been made for the good. And those are noted in our 1 year later update, which was released on Wednesday evening at the same link and website as the original report, which is the democraticautopsy.org. The changes that they have, that the Democratic Party has acknowledged and has changed, have to do with voter suppression laws. The Democratic Party is putting a lot of money around the country into reversing those voter suppression laws, and has given money to 41 states so that those states can invest in same-day voter registration and changing Democratic Party or party affiliation. And progress has also been made in the area of superdelegates. The Democratic Party itself, the DNC, has this very undemocratic method of selecting its presidential candidate by using the votes and allowing the votes of superdelegates who are present and former elected officials of the Democratic Party, but not reflective of the primaries or the caucuses, popular votes.
Right. This became a huge controversy during the primary elections of 2016.
Right. And it was the Bernie delegates who brought that issue to the fore in 2016, forcing the creation of a unity reform commission that did recommend reforms. And those some of those reforms were actually passed in August of this year. Those reforms included that the superdelegates were now, from now on, only going to be able to vote for a presidential nominee after the first ballot. So that effectively means that they can't vote unless it's a tie or very, very close. And so they're precluded from voting on the first ballot. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge change. And so yes, there
now,
has been
that would have election. That would have an impact on the next presidential election. Let's talk about the party's relationship with Wall Street, which is a really important aspect. A lot of voters, a lot of people who are eligible to vote, don't vote because they sort of see both the Democratic and the Republican Party as being beholden to Wall Street, celebrating when stocks are up, the Dow Jones is up, but when they look at their own, you know, personal finances, realize that they are struggling, living hand to mouth, and there's just such a disconnect between both major parties and what ordinary Americans are going through, and there's far too cozy of a relationship between Wall Street and the party. Has the party realized that voters aren't going to trust it if it is constantly pushing the corporate line, the pro-Wall Street positions?
It doesn't seem like it. The Democratic National Committee and also the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee take huge donations from huge corporate funders, and that's not changing. And you can see it in the votes in Congress also, because the Republicans worked with the banking industry to weaken the financial controls on banks as set forth in the Dodd-Frank Act. And they were able to pass it with support from Democrats, both in the Senate and in the House. And those Democrats who voted in favor of changing and weakening those rules and regulations, many of them are recipients of big banking financing and funding. And so that's sad and terrible. And also, the Democrats continue to support, for the most part, with just the exception of a handful of senators and House representatives, that Democrats continue to support obscene, bloated military budgeting, both for the Pentagon and then also under the National It's a Military Authorization Act. And I have
right, this is generally a two-party affair. It's quite bipartisan. Supporting the military, unfortunately, sees very little opposition from the Democratic Party. President Trump has made it one of his central platforms to increase military spending on a military that has already such a bloated budget. At a time when, of course, we now have fewer tax revenues thanks to the tax cuts that the GOP passed last year. Democrats could have united and said, unless you return the Treasury unless you return tax revenues to its original levels by taxing corporations and wealthy Americans, we're not going to vote for a military increase. They didn't do that. They voted for a military increase anyway. Now you have Mitch McConnell saying we need to cut entitlement programs. The Democrats, did they fail on the military issue like they've done in the past?
Oh, absolutely. On the 11% Pentagon budget increase that Trump was requesting, Nancy Pelosi actually boasted in an email to House Democrats, quote, "In our negotiations, congressional Democrats have been fighting for increases in funding for defense. And the House Senate leader, Chuck Schumer, declared, quote, "We fully support President Trump's Defense Department's requests." Hmm. So we're taking money away from the possibility of having good programs for people that will take them to the polls, like free college education in the public colleges, and Medicaid for all, and environmental regulations. And instead of having those kind of programs that really appeal to the entire country in poll after poll after poll, then we spend it all on the military. And that's because those corporations who are in the military industry seem to have this control over our elected representatives.
So speaking of polls, there are constant polls being done of the electorate. And, you know, it's after 2016, people have gotten kind of weary of what polls suggest because the polls in that election turned out to be so wrong. But still, in terms of public opinion polls, the party could quite easily take its lead from what is popular, right? So I understand that in the autopsy report, this 1 year later autopsy report, there are some very basic things that polls show would be popular among a majority of Americans. Medicare for all is one of them. And, you know, several other issues, that $15 an hour minimum wage, etc. Can you give us a sense of what these poll issues are that you think the Democratic Party really ought to listen to and create quite easily a winning platform?
Well, one is free public college education. So what the proposal put forward by mainstream Democrats right now in the Senate is a proposal to subsidize community colleges and then to reduce college debt by a formulaic way of doing it. And instead of just saying free public college education, that grabs people's attention. That's what people want. I mean, people can't even go to college these days because only wealthy people can go to college because it's so expensive. And that includes public colleges and private colleges. And so if we just said free public college education, that's our platform, that grabs people's attention. Also free healthcare or Medicaid for all, that grabs people's attention instead of, well, we're going to have another formula whereby we have the interceder insurance companies and we're going to regulate them a little bit more. And then,
right, the very complicated Affordable Care Act. Now, let's talk about Medicare for All, because this is a really interesting issue. President Trump wrote in quotes an op-ed. It's not clear if he actually wrote the op-ed that USA Today published quite recently, slamming the Democrats' proposal for Medicare for All, which is one indication that this is now a serious issue. Democrats just eight to 10 years ago didn't want to touch the issue of Medicare for All or single payer healthcare with a 10-foot pole. Have they come a distance on that? And is that because of grassroots pressure?
Oh, absolutely. It was 3 years ago that they didn't want to touch it, the Democrats. And now even Obama, who didn't even get the single payer advocates to the table when he was negotiating the Affordable Care Act. Now he's in favor of Medicare for All. And all of the people who are being talked about as presidential candidates are saying Medicare for All. And a lot of our congressional representative candidates are saying Medicare for All. So this is a new development, and it's because of grassroots pressure. Yes, you better believe it.
So, do you see the leaders of the party taking a leadership on this issue? We know that there was a formation of the Medicare for All caucus, a brand new caucus, which a lot of progressive Democrats like Pramila Jayapal and others joined. But is this something that the party as a whole, you think, is putting its weight behind? It would make sense for it to, given that it seems like it is a winning issue, but is it actually putting its weight behind it?
The Democratic Party leadership is not putting its weight behind any progressive policies or programs. So it's going to be our push, our the grassroots push. And so what's been going on is people, progressives all over the country are getting involved in the Democratic Party on the precinct level, on the ward level. Here in New Mexico, we formed a progressive caucus called the Adelante Progressive Caucus. I'm the chair of it right now. And we've got to then vote in progressive DNC members. And once we can do that, then we can continue to put pressure on the party. And with the candidates, they're coming up from the grassroots. We have candidates from all over the country, women of color, all over the country coming up. In New Mexico, we have two women of color, our Native American candidate for U.S. Congress, Deb Haaland, and a candidate for U.S. Congress also, Xochitl Torres Small. And so all of this push from the bottom, that's the only way that the Democratic Party is going to change, and that it has changed because it's so tied up with money right now. And there are members of the DNC who are actually consultants for the party, and the DCCC continues to support mainstream Democrats against progressive Democrats in districts all over the country. So until all of us, rise up to the top as we are doing, that it's going to be really hard to wrench away those that corporate funding. Like, for example, there was a movement within the DNC to ban the acceptance of fossil fuel money that contradicts the United States Democratic Party platform. But then under the leadership of Tom Perez, the ban was reversed. So now, again, we're back to where we started in accepting fossil fuel money in the DNC. So those kind of things we just have to keep pushing. And no, they're not, the leadership is not letting go of its monetary corporate base very easily. So it's going to just, but we're making so many inroads. It's just wonderful.
Pia, I want to talk to you about voter turnout as we head into this midterm election. This is an absolutely critical issue. We have a pretty concerted voter suppression efforts led by Republican state authorities all over the country. And voters of color in particular, who've been, reliable Democratic voters, often unfortunately getting taken for granted, but perhaps some of these new candidates of color that are running in the midterms will inspire voters of color to make it to the polls. The question is, what are the get out the vote efforts like that the Democratic Party has led, and are they going to be able to inspire enough people to come out to the polls in just a few weeks?
Well, I'm looking at this list of progressive candidates who are likely to take seats in the U.S. Congress. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York, Ilhan Omar, Minnesota, Rashida Tlaib in Minnesota, Ayanna Pressley in Massachusetts. And their agenda and the reason they're likely to win is because they are talking about military budget cuts so that we can apply that money to a bold progressive agenda. And this is the way that also young people can be attracted to the polls also, because young people have a more of a tendency to just say they're not for capitalism and that they're more socialist in their beliefs. And the leadership, like Nancy Pelosi, has spoken out against socialism, not really paying attention or listening to the frustration of young voters who, you know, increasingly don't have much of a future, both in terms of financial, because they're just burdened by college debt, and also in terms of the collapse of the ecosystem. And it's only those with these bold programs that are simple that can appeal to voters. And so, but and the voter suppression laws have to be reversed. And the Democratic Party, that's one area that the Democratic Party has made good strides on.
Let's also focus on some local efforts or state level efforts and even citywide efforts. The Republican Party has shown how important it is to work to elect majorities in state houses, to elect state governors, and through their state by state method have made huge changes to the country. The Democrats are perhaps now catching on. There have been some amazing grassroots efforts for district attorneys as well, which have been really great, not necessarily because the party wanted it so, but because grassroots activists pushed for it to be so. I know your report mentions Larry Krasner in Philadelphia, who's the new district attorney. Is the Democratic Party learning the lesson that local and statewide races are just as critical?
Yes, and there's also a push for criminal justice reform, which is usually a people of color led initiative. And in addition to Larry Krasner, who won on a platform of reforms for Philadelphia district attorney, and Randall Woodfin, who won for Alabama mayor on a platform of police accountability. We have Ernal Lucas, who won the race for Milwaukee County Sheriff. And in New Mexico, Kim Stewart is running in the southern part of the state, which is a traditionally conservative part of the state. And she's running for sheriff of Doña Ana County on a platform of community policing. And polls show that 80% of Democrats want criminal justice reform, and 87% want to decrease the prison population. In wow. Mexico, in Albuquerque, we have a progressive mayor. We have a progressive mayor, and he also ran on a platform of renewable energy, putting solar panels on the rooftops of all of our city buildings, and getting small businesses of color to be contracted with the city instead of bringing in outside contractors. So at least on this level in New Mexico, I can see a whole bunch of efforts being made on the local level to get in people who really care about the issues and aren't being supported by big money.
So finally, Pia, do you see a better connection between grassroots activists and organizations and the Democratic Party leadership? It feels like, you know, for years, the Democratic Party has needed to be pushed hard, often against its will, to take strong, bold, progressive positions on issues. And you have some exceptions, such as individual leaders like Bernie Sanders taking a stand. But given its losses in political power, is the Democratic Party allowing grassroots activists to lead the way? Is it paying attention to reports like the one we're discussing and taking them seriously?
Well, you know, the Democratic Party is divided right now between the leadership who has always done things with the alliance of big corporations and the grassroots who are trying to change things. So So the Democratic Party is bifurcated right now. And so there is no one specific answer. It just seems like the Democratic Party leadership in the form of the DCC supporting mainstream Democrats and giving them resources and consultants against the progressive or insurgent candidates, that's one indicator that they're not paying attention, because they should be just out. They should just be out of the primaries. The Democratic Party apparatus, like the DCCC, should just stay out of primaries and let the voters decide. And then, you know, we have the leadership in Congress and the Senate, which just don't get the message that we need to transfer money from this bloated military budget to programs that will help people. And, you know, Pelosi passed or introduced a law that would require any legislative initiative to be matched with funds in terms of its ability to spend money has to be matched with the ability to cut somewhere else.
This is the pay-go provision?
Yeah, right. And that kind of, and you know, and the Republicans don't pay attention to that. They just did all of their tax cuts without any consideration for the pay-go type of analysis that you have to have cut from other sources or have income from other sources in order to have an initiative. And we're gonna need that, because we have to change the infrastructure in this country for energy if we're going to go to a completely renewable energy. And we that's urgent right now. Mm-hmm. There's an analysis that came out just a couple of weeks ago that we have like 12 years before it's a colossal disaster environmentally around the world. So we have to take bold initiatives, and it's only the grassroots that's going to force it.
Well, we'll post a link to the website, democraticautopsy.org, from our website. I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Pia. Thanks for spending this time with us.
Well, thank you very much.
My guest is Pia Gallegos. She's a longtime civil rights attorney, current Democratic Party ward chair and central committee member in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She is the co-author of the report Autopsy, the Democratic Party in Crisis, which was released a year ago. And on Wednesday, the brand new report a year later, Democratic Autopsy 1 year later. And she is also the chair of the Adelante Progressive Caucus of the Democratic Party of New Mexico. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.